Working Cows Podcast, episode 122.
Welcome to the podcast that gives producers a platform to discuss and share paradigm-challenging practices. Practices that have increased the effectiveness of their operation and the joy that their families have received from this lifestyle.
All right, everybody, it's Clay Connery, host of the Working Cows Podcast, powered by the Global Ag Network. And I want to share on the front end of this episode an opportunity coming up in Bismarck, North Dakota on February 25th and 26th, 2020. Coming up here next month, the Burley County Soil Conservation District is going to be hosting their Farming and Ranching for the Bottom Line event. And this year at the Farming and Ranching for the Bottom Line event, they have Dr. Fred Provenza as their keynote speaker, a couple of good long sessions with him, an opportunity to hear a little bit about what he's talking about as far as let food and feed be our medicine and mending broken linkages, soil, plants, and herbivores and humans. So good opportunity there to hear from Dr. Fred Provenza. If you want to check out more information about that, you can check out today's show notes page, workingcows.net/122. And this fits well with our discussion for today. We're talking to a Burley County resident about his operation there in Burley County, North Dakota, just north of Bismarck. We're talking to Josh Dukart, and we're going to talk to Josh about the to-don't list. Maybe you've heard of a to-do list, but today we're going to talk with Josh about the to-don't list and some of the things that we should be stopping and some of the things that we should be trying to let nature take care of. So, Josh, thanks for joining me today on the Working Cows Podcast.
Thank you. I appreciate the opportunity and the invitation to participate in this particular event for sure. I've gained quite a bit of learning opportunities myself with some of the previous podcasts that you've done and know some of those people personally. And if there's anything, in our personal or professional experiences that or observations that can help others, we're glad to share.
Well, it's good to have you here, and I was privileged to attend your holistic management roadshow that the South Dakota Grassland Coalition put on, and I attended the faith event, the end of a long week for you of 5 days of talking for 5 or 6 hours at a time. So I really appreciated that opportunity. And in the course of that event, you brought up the idea of the to don't list. And I think that was a powerful idea that we could mine some nuggets out of for a little bit. And I would just like to give you an opportunity to introduce the idea of a to-don't list.
Okay. Well, first of all, I just to share where that came from initially is our particular. We have the opportunity to ranch in West Central North Dakota on a landscape that the first of my family to be on there was my grandparents in the 40s. My parents had the opportunity to take over management in the 80s. And within the last 5 or 6 years, my wife and I and our 3 young children have had the opportunity to take over the next generation of management. And one of the things that seemed to kind of highlight this whole process to begin with is just the overwhelming number of things that seemed to needed to be done. And it wasn't anything that the previous generations had not done. It just was simply so many things on our to-do list that really became just challenging for us to manage and seem to almost just run wild at times. And I think a to-do list is a good thing, and we use that. So just to kind of highlight that end of the spectrum first, our to-do list helps us organize. It helps us coordinate. It helps us prioritize. Gives us a bit of flow if we need a step-by-step process for anything. And for me personally, it many times helps me just get things out of my head and onto paper so that I can basically clear up some space for creative thought and that sort of thing without losing those ideas that for some reason had some significance. So I still have them, but they don't necessarily have to be juggled in my brain anymore. And so a to-do list has been very helpful, and we will continue to do those. It can help, you know, drive productivity. It can also help us, you know, stay on track, but it can also be never-ending. And it tends to, at least in our situation, as soon as we would cross something off, it would tend to repopulate. And so the idea of completing a to-do list never was really the end goal that we were able to achieve. And there's a gentleman by the name of Adam Grant from the Wharton School of Business that had a quote that I think, well, it resonated with me. He said, a to-do list can be the human equivalent of a hamster wheel. And we can get more efficient with our time and getting things done, but really what it does is it just spins that wheel faster and faster and faster. And it was a realization for me at some point, and this was actually a few years ago, that there's actually more things on my list, my to-do list, than what I was actually going to be able to get done. And yet those things continued to stay on that list. And probably the further aha moment came is that these things are important to me or to somebody for some reason. And because they stayed on the list, I continued to give mental energy to them. Now, they just kept getting relegated further and further down the list. And maybe they were higher priority at one point, but then they started getting less and less priority. But I was not able or willing to just let go of them. And so I was giving energy to things that honestly were probably not going to get done. And no matter how efficient I got with my time, that didn't seem to take care of this conundrum. And I needed to be more effective with my time. And that's something, you know, we can maybe talk about in a little bit. But in summary, basically a to-don't list is really similar to a to-do list, except it gives, at least it gave us the opportunity to cross some things off our list permanently. And that is where we really started to make some gains. And it's not that we've got it all figured out, but we needed, even in our work in progress situation, we needed to start making some gains, and to be able to cross some things off our list permanently was a big deal to us.
What are some of the first things that went on the to-don't list?
Well, in order to describe those, I should probably give you just a real brief context of where or why these things would go on our particular to-don't list. First of all, kind of couple of big picture principles for personally and professionally, and especially for our ranch, is, you know, our umbrella is faith-based, and it really is, you know, our strength and comfort comes from our relationship in Jesus Christ. But we needed to have a vehicle to live that out and manage through the many variables that we had and that we were facing. And these are not necessarily uncommon challenges that many farmers and ranchers and business owners in general. The vehicle that kind of came together to help navigate and live out, you know, the belief system that we have is based on the holistic management principles, ranching for profit principles and soil health principles, which really have a lot of overlap between all of those. And those helped us both from a personal standpoint and a professional standpoint. And it really allowed us to think about how we can be more effective rather than simply more efficient. Now, I think both of those things are important. But as a gal at one of those roadshow stops in South Dakota described, and I've heard this multiple times, is that, you know, being efficient is like hitting the bullseye on the target over and over and over again. And yet at some point you might realize that we're not even shooting at the right target in the first place. And by doing that, our efficiency was quite good, but our effectiveness was not very good. And so if we can identify what target we want to shoot at, then later we can start working on our accuracy and our consistency. Or another way to look at it is finding the right road for us to travel down. And once we get that direction established or our effectiveness, then we can start looking at how fast we can go down that road in terms of efficiency. And then the last kind of big picture concept that kind of drives what we do, and this ties directly then to the to-don't versus the to-do list, is that with our particular ag operation, and I think this is maybe fairly common, is that so much of the value that we were or are generating comes in the form of active income, meaning that we have to do things in order to actually bring in money, bring in wealth, or generate a value of some sort. And it was getting more and more challenging as this to-do list, or which correlates very closely, I think, to active income, is that it was just getting so long, and it was not getting, it was building faster than we were able to cross things off. And I was finding that it was very hard to turn the ranch switch off when it came to going on a vacation or even spending a couple days away at the lake with my family. And that was not a good or sustainable social situation. And we were looking for ways to be more effective and therefore efficient, but in the right order. And we started looking at how can we make our ranch maybe more passive income producing. Now, that's not necessarily saying that I want to be an absentee landowner, not that there's anything wrong with that, but I very much enjoy the many things we do on our ranch and want to continue to do those things. But if there's things that can be in process, working and generating value, that I don't necessarily need to be actively building or constructing or doing at that time, that's only going to be better from a holistic standpoint, socially, ecologically, and financially. And so whereas the active income part really was tied to the to-don't list, the passive income version of all of this or concept really was closely tied to the to-don't list. And that's why that to-don't list started to become more and more important to us. And there's another gentleman, he's an author and business guru by the name of Tim Ferriss, and he says, what you don't do determines what you can do. And that really was true for us in that we were missing time to be able to sit with creative thought and be able to have our meetings and discussions, brainstorming that needed to take place. And so we needed to start finding things that could go on that to-don't list that we could cross off permanently in order to make room for those things. So you asked what things, you know, got put on that to-don't list. And some of those things in general were things that I needed to really think about, and they weren't necessarily easy to put on that list, but there were a number of things that I thought I was supposed to do or that I should do or that I had to do. And I had to go through all of those things and really ask myself, why are we doing those things? And is it important that I'm doing those things or doing them to the extent that I was? Another version of that is items that others think that I should have been doing or others that you know, create some sort of pressure that I need to do some of those things. And if neither of those things are actually helping us achieve or move towards our goals, we really needed to question those things because we many times have fallen into the trap of just doing things that we've done before just because we've done them before. Or another thing that I have found to be an unintentional pressure is urgency. Many times if something is urgent, whether it's important or not, urgency tends to drive, psychologically, tends to drive what we put our efforts towards. And so we needed to identify importance as a big player in that, and it helped us sort through and the urgency factor and not just let urgency trump importance in some ways. So we asked, you know, what are some of those things? You know, a big one for us that we put on there is don't do what our soils can do for us. Now, that's a building process. That's not necessarily just stop cold turkey, you know, make that decision one evening and the next day it's all different. But we have tried to figure out how can we feed our soils in such a way that they can feed everything else. But it was important to us that not only are there some things embedded in there that need to go on the to-do list, but there's very much some things embedded in there that need to go on the to-don't list from the standpoint that, you know, if we prop up our soils or we force feed them or we micromanage them, they're going to operate in a certain way. When we've just fed our soils carbon, for instance, and allowed them to take that in, supply itself, hopefully have a water cycle that's working, you know, more and more effectively all the time, we have found that our soils are starting just now, after a few years, start giving back in ways that we didn't necessarily think they were capable of. So that was one thing that went on that to-do list. Another example, and I may have shared this at that roadshow, and maybe not, like you said, Clay, after 5 days, I was wondering what I had shared any given day versus not.
Yeah, I used to work at a church where we had two services, and preaching two sermons back-to-back was always tough because I couldn't remember what I had said when. And so doing it 5 days in a row, I couldn't imagine. So good on you.
Absolutely. Yeah, I got to the point where one of the first things I would say in the morning is apologize if I repeated or you know, failed to share something that I maybe had before, and therefore interaction and questions were encouraged.
Yeah.
But one of the things that, and I had to have someone else help point this out to me, and at the moment, I'll be honest with you, I felt a bit embarrassed or ashamed because I hadn't thought of this, but sometimes we stare at a situation so often and so intently day after day that we unintentionally end up having blinders on. But one of those was, you know, our ranch is, well, it's got a number of enterprises that lay over the top of it, and our ranch is primarily a grass-based operation. Of which we've got quite a bit of topography, although not many trees. We've got coulees and creeks and uplands and meadows and different things like that. And a lot of that's fairly close to our headquarters. And yet there's a little bit of cropland and some tame grass that is often where we have wintered our cattle. In a cow-calf operation as well as a stocker operation, we're two of the enterprises that we took over when we took over management. And we had the discussion a couple of winters ago that, you know, these cattle up on this upper ground without a lot of protection probably were not performing as well as they could have been. I mean, we care for our animals and wanted to do an even better job of that and wanted to maybe get a bit better handle on how we could care for them during the winter months. And protection is a part of that equation. And so we started looking at, okay, what can we do to provide that protection? And the discussion went anywhere from, you know, can we stack bales in such a way to provide some temporary windbreak, but that's going to require then fencing that off? Can we, you know, build some permanent windbreak out of posts and wood or metal or something like that? But that's obviously going to require some labor and some cost. We thought about the portable windbreak route, you know, where we would buy the freestanding portable windbreak panels and how many do we need and do we have that in our budget and can we handle that? Where would we get them? All of those things. And then it was at a workshop that year, that winter, that someone who had seen a presentation that I had given, and I tend to use quite a few pictures, and he said, well, I thought your place had quite a bit of varied topography and elevation fairly close to your headquarters. And I said, well, it does. And he just looked at me and he goes, why don't you use that? And I'm like, wow, you know, maybe instead of looking at adding infrastructure, maybe I just need to rethink how we do our grazing planning, what we graze, what times of the year, and maybe the grass that we normally typically use summer and fall, maybe that needs to be more of a fall-winter thing or a winter-spring type of window in terms of time frame. And although we didn't get it all done in 1 year, we have slowly transitioned that way. And, you know, we already rent that land. We already, you know, have access to it and the flexibility, mind you, to be able to utilize it as we see fit. And we have slowly started to move that direction. And we needed to, you know, add a couple of water points and some things to it in order to really make it work well. But that's something we already had. And so the to-don't list was don't just spend the money. Don't just write the check. Sometimes it's just behaviors that we want to avoid that need to go on this to-don't list and just utilize what we have. And that was one of the bigger ones for us more recently. That went on this particular to-don't list.
That's good stuff. I really appreciate that. We're going to get to efficient versus effective a little bit more later, I think. But I did open up this to some questions from my private Facebook group, And when I did, I said, we're going to talk about letting nature do the work for you, which is kind of what you've just alluded to there. And I want to talk a little bit more about some of the other things that you've started letting nature do for you as well going forward. But this question came up, how do we not go broke in the transition? For example, how much pressure do we apply at once in removing crutches that conventional beef production paradigm has provided cattle without disaster?
That's a very good and genuine question, because one of the benefits that I see with managing holistically is that we are always accounting for the financial aspect, the social aspect, and the biological aspect. And so with this particular question, one of the things that we absolutely can't leave behind is how far do we push this thing, how quickly, and what's our financial situation in terms of being able to absorb something on the short term if it means that our long-term situation can be better. And for us, that has played out as our genetics have slowly changed, as our grazing planning has slowly changed. And this is where the planning process in each of these, having a financial plan, a cash flow plan, a marketing plan, as well as a grazing plan, a drought plan. And it seems like a lot of plans, but it's the actual planning process when going through all of that that is really the ammunition that I think we need in order to make decisions, because we can have the best plan in the world, and day number one, week number one, some variable can change, and it really throws everything, you know, not completely out the window, but it changes everything enough to where the plan all of a sudden now needs to change. But since we went through that planning process, if we were fairly comprehensive in that, now all of a sudden the ability to regroup can handle or can happen, relatively quickly. And one other thing that I think plays a major role, especially when we're dealing with livestock, with plants, with soils, anything that's living, really, is that our power of observation needs to be at a pretty high level. I had the opportunity when I worked for the Burley County Soil Conservation District to sit next to a gentleman by the name of Ken Miller. And he is he's still ranching. He might even be semi-retired now. But, you know, one of the things that he talked about that he found to be one of his most valuable assets over the years was just his power of observation. And he said, you know, our fast-paced, you know, instant gratification type of society now, it's real easy to not take time to do that. And he said, by just observing the cattle, by observing our soils, by taking time to look at plants, as well as making sure we're observing and keeping track of our finances, all of those things playing together, there will be things that will show up. And he put it as, you know, Mother Nature, or better yet, God's going to throw us a bone at times. And if we're just willing, have the time and the space in our mind to be able to observe it, we're going to be able to take those things and understand that we need to tweak things or do something to get back on track, you know, that sort of thing. And as far as how much, therefore, pressure can we put on and not go broke in the process, really is that's going to be pretty unique in each situation. But we need to have kind of all those pieces in place on being able to track things. Otherwise, yeah, it's possible that something could go astray. And if we don't realize that it went astray, if we don't observe that, we could run into some trouble.
Are you comfortable giving any kind of a recommendation as a place to start in removing crutches, or is that too much of a case-by-case, operation-by-operation issue to even start there?
Well, I tend to not give recipes, so to speak,
right,
because I do think that operations – the people in them, the resources available to them, the financial situations are unique enough to where it's maybe a bit dangerous to do that. But I think one of the biggest things is understand where do you want to go? What is your target? Where do you want to be? What does that look like? If we don't know what we want our landscape to look like, or what we want our financial situation to be, or what we want our family situation to be, if we don't know what that looks like, and a real good way to test that is, can you write it down? Can you put it on paper and actually describe it? And if you can't do that, that's where I would start, is I would start with trying to determine what that is. Because if the approach is, well, we just want something better, or we just want something that's less stressful, that doesn't really have a whole lot of power, I don't think, in terms of being able to achieve something. But if you know what it looks like, then all of a sudden we can then compare what it is you want versus where you're currently at, and then start to identify where's the weakest link at this point. Is it a financial thing? Is it a livestock thing? Is it a soil management thing? Whatever it might be, and then we start there. And I know that seems kind of general, but it's that way on purpose because I've had the wonderful opportunity to work for and learn from many, many different ranches in many different environments. And I have, although there's some similar things with many of them, there's enough uniqueness to all of them. And it's a good thing that there's uniqueness to all of them, because that also means that not only are there unique challenges, but there's unique opportunities with every operation as well.
Do you feel that it's best to start with the weakest link because that one has the least potential to be negatively impacting your business financially and in all the other ways as well, socially and those things too?
I think the weakest link is one of the primary areas to focus on, or at least utilizing the idea or the concept of weakest link, because if you've got a basically, it's the idea that if you've got a chain and you're looking to strengthen that whole chain, whatever it might be, if we don't strengthen that weakest link, the whole chain is going to still stay in the same level of production or profitability or lack thereof without strengthening that weakest link. And sometimes identifying that weakest link is, well, on our place, it was difficult for us to – we had some ideas, but it actually took some outside perspective, therefore, to try and narrow it down and figure it out. And sometimes we just have so much connection in so much sentimental value at times and honestly have just stared at it for so long that sometimes it's hard for us to take a step back and look at it from a broader perspective. Sometimes we can do that, and that's good. Sometimes we need some outside perspective in order to identify those things.
And you, in your role, are trying to or are helping people obtain that outside perspective. Can we kind of kill two birds with one stone here and talk about how you have helped people become more effective and kind of contrast that with efficiency and through your role as a consultant, or I don't remember your preferred term on that one. Coach, I think is right, but could you help out in that way as well?
Sure. Well, for more than a decade now, my wife Tara and I have had in certainly you can coin it how you want, consulting, coaching, teaching, facilitating type of business, and we understand both firsthand and from a distance that there are a lot of challenges in agriculture. And we firmly believe that it's not about having all the right answers. It's actually about first identifying and being willing to ask the right questions. And that is the process through holistic management, through soil health, through being that outside perspective. That's the facilitation process that we bring to the table and try and help people navigate through that particular process. And it's not about, never getting to an answer, but oftentimes there are so many answers out there. There are so many things that we can do and try that it can almost, well, in many cases, be overwhelming. But really to identify what it is we want and then have that as a reference point so we can start asking the right questions. Sometimes those questions being very challenging or difficult, and depending on who's asking those questions of who, can also be tough to do. If you've ever been in a situation where you needed to ask a question of someone in a older generation in your family or a younger generation or a business partner or something like that, There's maybe some questions that people would like to ask, but they maybe don't know how to ask them, or they're afraid to ask them based on how it might be perceived. And as a facilitator, that's the role that we can play. And no doubt we'll have suggestions and can be a part of the brainstorming process, but we have kind of changed our approach, all with the idea of being more effective in how we consult. And that's one of the reasons why we actually tend to like the term coaching as opposed to, or facilitating as opposed to consulting. Because early in my consulting career, I thought my role was you wanted an answer and I was going to give you an answer based on what to do, when to do it, how to do it, where to do it. But unfortunately, there were times when that didn't work out, and that really came back to me. And I was not working in a very effective manner by doing that. Because honestly, if Tara and I do our job effectively by helping you ask the right questions, we should, in essence, work ourselves out of a job. Now, that maybe doesn't provide a lot of job security, but it's the idea that we would rather be a part of your team for a day or for several days or an afternoon or whatever it might be, helping to ask questions, helping to explore and navigate, but in the end, empowering the people that we work with to be able to make those decisions and to make them confidently and with a good chance of success. Because this effectiveness thing, I think, is really important, and it comes back again to that don't list, that in order to really be effective, there needs to be some things that we needed to stop doing. It's kind of like having books on a bookshelf. You know, if we've got our to don't list, which can be a very effective tool, it's like we have the book stop or the book end on one end of the bookshelf. But if we don't have something on the other end of that row of books, we really don't have a boundary on that end that helps us. And by having a to-don't list that puts a boundary on that other end of the spectrum as well, and that's really provided some structure for us and in many other operations that we've had the opportunity to work with.
Was that transition from helping people ask questions or giving people the answers to the transition from giving people answers to helping them ask questions, was that facilitated in your life by understanding the importance of helping people understand why they're doing something?
Very much so. That's an excellent way to put it, because when we were trying to just provide answers, again, it was about the where, the when, the how, you know, the what, those sorts of things. But once we really internalized that quite possibly the most challenging yet most powerful questions that can be asked are the why questions, just as you brought up. And they're challenging from the reason that sometimes they can be conflictual, or they can be threatening, or they can maybe not have a cut and dried black and white answer type of thing. Whereas the other questions tend to be a little more within, was more within our comfort zone. It tends to be more within the comfort zone of others. But the why questions, once we kind of get over that hurdle and we're willing to ask those questions and being willing to be presented with those questions, boy, there's just really some progress that can be made, because that's a willingness that we're maybe not necessarily all ingrained with, and in some cases needs to be a learned trait.
I would like to give you an opportunity to close up here by sharing a little bit about what it is you and your wife, Tara, do. You've already kind of introduced that, but could you give some examples of things you've got coming up? This is going to come out on January 13th of 2020, and so if you've got things that people still have time to get involved in yet this winter, you can go ahead and plug those and the other services that you and your wife are providing to people who would be the audience of this podcast.
Okay. All right. Well, I appreciate the opportunity to do that. You know, we have this coaching and facilitation business, and that really the best way to explore that further, in addition to the schools that we teach, is through our website. Our ranch and business is called Seek First Ranch. And if you go to seekfirstranch.com, all of that is laid out, both the opportunity to look at the services that we provide, as well as get to know us and our family a little bit better. You know, we do things that stem directly from the ranch. like sell grass-finished beef, and we've added some additional enterprises in the process over the past few years to diversify and really to look at layering enterprises that stack well and that fit well in terms of our primarily grass-based ranch. In addition to that, on the website, you will find quite descriptive versions of each of the schools that we teach, the different facilitation, consulting, and coaching services that we provide for people. And it is quite varied, but it's because our clients in the past have tended to have quite varied challenges as well as opportunities. And we do, although we do try and address many of those challenges, we try to take a very positive, empowering outlook on what we can help people with. It certainly has been beneficial for us in that regard. We do have a two-day school coming up in Myrtle, South Dakota here at the end of January. We have a school coming up in Iowa coming up in February. And really, it's based on request. As soon as there's a few people that are willing to gather, we are willing to start having that discussion about what their needs are, what they would like to maybe explore in terms of schools or services, and then we'll go from there. We really get excited about being able to travel and provide those things for other people. And like I brought up earlier, one of the side benefits to any of these activities is that we learn from the people that we get to interact with and develop an even larger and larger network, just like you've done with all the podcasts that you've done.
Absolutely, yeah. It's been, as I said many times, it's been the most affordable continuing education I've ever done.
Absolutely.
One last thing. What is going on in Burley County, North Dakota? You've got Minokin Farm, you've got Brown's Ranch, you've got Seek First Ranch. I mean, and probably some others I don't know about, but there just seems to be a lot of paradigm busters up there. So I didn't know if you had any perspective on that.
Well, I had the opportunity starting back in 2005 to go work for the Burley County Soil Conservation in their office, which includes both the Natural Resource Conservation staff as well as the Burley County Soil District staff. And I didn't really know much about that staff when I first moved there and got that opportunity. But it didn't take but a day or two to realize that there was something pretty special there, not just with the staff, but with the board that was there and with the individual farmers and ranchers, men and women in that particular county, that just really had just a really different way and non-status quo way of thinking. And you combine that with the North Dakota Grazing Lands Coalition, which is like-minded individuals, farmers and ranchers, men and women, but now scattered across the state of North Dakota, that also seem to have a holistic management, soil health-based perspective. And what was really just most infectious about these people is their opportunistic view on how agriculture could be, and for many of them, how it was starting to play out for them. And I really think that whenever you get enough people together that are willing to be open to new ideas, willing to be challenged by others, but a friendly challenge, not a conflictual or you know, trying to drag someone, try and prove it's wrong or something like that, but literally a very strong support system. As that built, all of a sudden you wanted to push through barriers and push the envelope for the benefit of the group, not just yourself. And I really think that was evident when that started to grow in Burley County. And I had the opportunity to be there for about 10 years. And this is maybe a whole nother story in and of itself, but farming and ranching was never, even though I grew up on this particular place, the opportunity, or at least my perceived opportunity, is that coming here to farm a ranch as a professional occupation for my future, for my family, was never going to be a part of it. The place was too small by conventional standards, and I had a lot of outside encouragement. My parents supported me no matter what I, you know, decided to do, but outside encouragement to not go into production agriculture, not go into farming or ranching. And at first I kind of took it upon myself to buy into that and go do something else. But once I got to Burleigh County, once I was introduced to so many of these concepts and these ideas, all of a sudden, there were opportunities popping out like crazy that I just couldn't ignore anymore. And my wife and I finally decided to jump on some of those. And the downside to that is I left my job at Burleigh County. I left my job with the North Dakota Grazing Lands Coalition, but have forever been impacted by the opportunities that they helped me see that I couldn't see before. And it really is a different perspective on agriculture, and it's what excites us the most about what we can do here and our belief that what we can do here is so abundant that it's not just for us, but the fruits of this place can be shared with so many more people.
Very cool. Appreciate that answer. The importance of community, the importance of a group of people around you who can encourage you and challenge you is invaluable. So pretty cool. And Josh, I thank you for your time today. And if we haven't left anything too major on the table, I will I'll let you go.
Yeah, I guess the one thing that I would close with is one of the major things that this don't list, because that was our theme today, has provided for us that I didn't really see initially, is that it has provided a lot of autonomy for the people in our particular family and working situation. Our discussions now are based more on results rather than processes, and we really have found a strong ally in Mother Nature, and we let her do as much of the heavy lifting as absolutely possible, and it's really taken a lot off of our shoulders and really has allowed our operation to flourish. And it's got a long ways to go, but it's just one more thing that excites us about the future.
And I think that can help some of those people overcome those fears when they're looking to start making those changes, is realizing that if you're willing to pay attention and do some of the planning on the front end, Mother Nature, or as you said earlier, God will meet you halfway in his creation.
You know, one of the things that has really worked that we're excited about now that we didn't think we would ever be a part of, and honestly took a little bit of convincing of other members within the family, is that any time that we can take something that's an expense and actually turn it over into a profit center of some sort. And the example of that for us has been, for years, you know, we were warned of and had some pressure to take care of certain weeds on our place. And we've got some pretty rough country, not near as rough as many, you know, ranch on, but much rougher than, you know, we're just going to be able to drive anywhere on the place because we can't. So we would hire people to come in and take care of some of those weeds, and that was happening on an annual basis. And that started to bother me, not only from the standpoint that every year we're applying these chemicals, and it seemed like as long as we did it every year, we kind of maintained. But then as soon as we would take a year or two off, things would just come right back. And so we weren't really addressing the root cause of the problem, number one, and it was costing us money to just maintain or even go backwards in some cases. So we actually introduced sheep here this last year. And so the part of the to don't list that applied to is we needed to stop doing things that were not very effective, which the spraying part was not. And I'm not suggesting that that's not a tool to consider at times, because it certainly can be. But in our situation, we were not gaining any ground by doing that. The thing I needed to be careful of about this adding something to the to-don't list to the to-do list by adding sheep is, really, was it just adding one more thing to do, one more job, or was adding something that could also start to align itself for more of a passive income type scenario? And in this case here, this is something that my children were very interested in. Now, do they still need some help from their mother and father on this? Certainly. But it has given them the opportunity to manage something, learn something, think on their own, you know, managing those responsibilities, bring some benefit ecologically to the ranch in time, financially to the ranch. And quite honestly, it's provided quite a bit of quality of life and social interaction that we were not spending before. And so by doing that, it just really has opened up. What's the next thing? And maybe adding an enterprise to our particular place in order to not put more load on ourselves. Maybe that includes someone else being able to bring in an enterprise and stack it on top of what we've got already. We maybe don't necessarily need to manage it other than maybe a little bit of oversight and some decision making, but then it's an opportunity for someone else. It's an opportunity for our land, and it's opportunity to build wealth in the community. And so we've really just, as we make one change, we realize that we have some momentum psychologically to think about additional changes. We do need to scrutinize those, but we need to think about them opportunistically first before we start thinking critically about them second. And that's a process we've tried to use in order to give everything a chance first before we just disregard it. And so we think that it's just the tip of the iceberg as to where we can go. And I had mentioned the opportunity to give autonomy before, and that's again what this to don't list has offered, because I was in the process of thinking I needed to micromanage everything, and it really got to the point where Josh was not doing a real good job of managing anything because of that approach. And that's why, like I said earlier, our discussions now are based on, hey, this is what kind of results we want out of the end of this particular process. Dad, you can tackle that how you think. If you need some help, let me know. But I'm not going to tell you how I think it needs to be done. Likewise, the younger generation, our children, I want them to be able to think through and solve problems on their own. And yes, if they need help, we will be there for counsel and for help. But at the same time, I don't want them to rely on Dad to give them a to-do list of, you know, 6 or 8 or 12 steps on exactly how to do something, because then they're more robotic rather than human. And so these enterprises just, I don't know, so intimately tie social, financial, and biological together. That's probably the biggest takeaway for us, is that because of tying those three things together, everybody can participate, and we can be here for the long term as long as we don't lose sight of what it is we really want and what umbrella we're really operating under.
Very good, Josh. Thank you for your time today.
Yes, thank you.
Since I am still a rookie podcaster at this point and struggle to wrap these up successfully, sometimes I do want to remind you of the opportunities that Josh had coming up here in the near future. Murdo, South Dakota, he's doing a two-day workshop down there, and then he's got some more events as well that will be linked in the show notes page at workingcows.net/122. They'll be linked to the upcoming events page on his website, seekfirstranch.com. And it also sounds like a great opportunity coming up in Burley County on February 25th and 26th. If you want more information, check out the show notes page for today at workingcows.net/122, and this is an event put on by a bunch of different partners: Area 4 Research Farm, Bismarck State College, Burley County Soil Conservation District, Minocan Farm, Morton County Soil Conservation District, North Dakota Grazing Lands Coalition, NDSU Extension, NDSU Research Extension Centers, USDA Agricultural Research Service, USDA Natural Resources Conservation Service. So a lot of good partners there. Dr. Fred Provenza is the keynote speaker. So if you're interested in going and hearing Dr. Fred Provenza, who was referenced on episode 121, be sure to check out the event put on there by the Burley County Soil Conservation District. And coming up here real shortly, I'm going to get out another episode of the Working Cows podcast. Sorry I was late on this one. We are going to be talking next week with, or real soon, we're going to be talking with Michelle Patton of Patton Bookkeeping Services. So keep your eyes peeled for that episode of the Working Cows podcast coming your way real soon.
We invite you to visit workingcows.net to subscribe to the show via iTunes or Stitcher. You'll also find detailed show notes pages, resources from our guests, and the industry leaders who have influenced them. For more ideas on putting your cows to work for you in a more profitable way, tune in next week.